Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. Join Aphasiana and Babla on Saturdays as they teach you the fine art of being part saint, part sinner. Mondays are split between Hearts of L&P with Victoria and Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. Now, these shows are designed to color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. How you doing, Pam?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, I had a nice, relaxing day. You know, not a whole lot going on. The weather's starting to warm up, and of course, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets and delving into the poetry. And you know, we got a variety tonight, but of course, we are starting the night out with carryovers from Jim Morrison. So, absolutely one of my favorite topics. And how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Awesome.
Waiting on spring to be full.
Yeah, yep. Well, you get it a lot quicker than I do. So you'll get that spring joy a little quicker than I do, which will be nice. Flowers, all that fun stuff.
Absolutely. And warm,
yep.
Sullen air.
Oh, yeah. Feels good, that's for sure. Looking forward to it. All right, well, we do have a guest on hold, and I'm going to go ahead and bring him on.
Bring Randy on
in. So, yes, welcome, Randy. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Oh, it's going just great. I'm so glad to be here, and glad to hear that you guys are doing well.
Good to hear you, yes. Randy.
Right back at you.
Yeah.
Oh, that let's kick things off in the right direction.
All right. Sounds good. Randy, come ahead and put up your poem. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. My poem is based on prompt number 8. No One Here Gets Out Alive. And I used 27 Doors song titles within the poem. And it's entitled No One Here Gets Out Alive. Last Indian summer, strange days put on quite a display. A crazy, reckless, wild child, the queen of the highway, had her cars just by my window until the end of night, riders on a storm, on a moonlight drive, what a sight. Maggie McGill, an L.A. woman, always filled with desire. She wants to talk, to say, hello, I love you, light my fire. I used to love her madly, she said, love me 2 times. And she was once a 20th century fox in her prime. We broke up early on blue Sunday, waiting for the sun. She said we could be so good together and have fun. I said the odds are 5-1, you'll leave, running blue. This ain't a soft parade, people are strange, so are you. Our love died, just like the unknown soldier, long gone. Your words don't touch me, unhappy girl. It's all wrong. We sailed on the ship of fools. Don't believe your eyes. The crystal ship guarantees no one here gets out alive. End poem.
Great read, Randy. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, I really like this. First of all, I'm thrilled that you could call in and read it yourself. And I thought it was clever to use 27 Doors songs. I mean, and I'm guessing that had to have been on purpose given that Jim Morrison was part of the 27 So that's just a really cool accident. What I like about this on a technical level is that oftentimes you use song titles and especially choose to use such a large amount of them. And when you do rhyme, they can oftentimes feel as if they were forced into the poem. But as we already know from your rhyming that it's never forced. But to be able to pull off a poem that tells a story and uses song titles, and I recognize a lot of the song titles, you know, because of the fact of listening to The Doors. But, and I'm sure many people do, but there's not a single point where I thought, wow, Randy just really tried to put a round peg in a square hole. Not at all. And I really like this all the way through, but I particularly am drawn to the lines, you know, I used to love her madly. She says, love me two times, and she was once a 20th Century Fox in her prime. We broke up early on Blue Sunday waiting for the sun. She said, we could be so good together and have fun. I said, the odds are 5-1, you'll leave running blue. This ain't a soft parade. People are strange. So are you. And I like how it's that whole idea of reading that there's more to life, that not necessarily like the moment you're in life, the relationship you're in life, puts you on that ship of fools, that crystal ship. This actually, I was saying Rex's show last night, or on the Rhythm and Rhyme show, that not on the show, but on the talk in Late Night Poets, that I have two friends who, what they used to love to do was they would make conversation. They would see how long they could hold conversation for using titles of songs and lines from songs. And I was just thinking to myself, that would be so much fun to hear you and Rex do that, because I think it would be really fun to see how long the two of you could hold off a conversation using titles of songs and lines of songs. But, yeah, I'm really impressed with this, Randy, and I thought it was very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
I'll second that one, but I also got – I like this book, No One Here Gets Out Alive. I know that was one of the prompts, but it was also the title of a book about Morrison back in the day, so – that was also a night. Was one of the reasons I put it up to begin with, see where everybody goes with it. Boy, did you take it down that road of what was it? Of how strange days and people are strange. You've incorporated everything in such a nicely woven fabric that even if you didn't stand up with the capitals into each. For each song title, this would have been a great read just by itself without understanding that thought and letting someone's mind wander. But you've hit on the notes of all the songs that are in here, which is perfect. And you wrote them in such a fashion as to, I don't know how much time you spent on this, but I'm gathering you put some great time and effort into it because of the amount of songs and then trying to work the story into it. That makes sense, and you did that great. I like the last two lines of working this, just for the simple thought. You drop in the unknown soldier in that first line of the last stanza, and then you hit on, we sailed on the ship of fools, don't believe your eyes. The crystal ship guarantees no one here gets out alive. And those are two great songs, but they also hit on that notion of you should be enjoying life instead of playing for the fool, and imagining yourself with that that crystal ship of guarantee, because there isn't any.
Yeah, thank you, Rex. Yeah, it did take a while, because even though I've been a Doors fan for many years, there were some of the songs that are kind of obscure. I had to do a little research, and it took, it was, I don't know, 3 hours or more probably writing this poem, so. It took some consideration and time.
Well, even 3 hours is a pretty short span, considering you managed to run all that into all those lines and hold up a great piece to have somebody read on and enjoy.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. All right, Pam. Where would you like to go now?
All right. So the 27 songs was purposely chosen, right?
It was a happy accident.
Well, look at you.
I wish I could take credit for it, but until you mentioned it, it hadn't dawned on me.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. A happy accident. I like that. All right. And up next we have Shake You Up by Passion's Promise. And it goes like this. In a sweet, magical form, I play penning pieces in a different way. Way or that away. In my style, break traditions or daily living for a while. To break them up, it seems, I get a giggle seeing the breaking of dreams. He said, she said, a tearing at the seams. Back it up now, ain't no need for face-to-face. No need being a downright damn disgrace. So in poetry, I love to draw attention to the fact that I watch what people go through and pen my frustration of what I see in you. I love to get you thinking in my style, break traditions of daily living for a while. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Passion took two prompts. If my poetry aims to achieve anything, it's to deliver people from the limited ways in which they see and feel, and I like people who shake other people up and make them feel uncomfortable. All right, Randy, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
Well, I thought it had a real good flow to it. It was a very good read, Pam, as well. And I like up in the first stanza, I love to get you thinking in my style, break traditions of daily living for a while. And then it goes, shake them up to break them up. It seems, I get a giggle seeing the breaking of dreams. It looks like, you know, someone breaking up, having trouble in relationships, and going through all the experiences that entails. I thought it was a really nice poem, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Randy. Pam, how about you?
This was a delight to read. Now, Passions is a very talented rhyming poet. I liked how the first and last ended with the exact same lines. I thought that kind of provided that loop around that provides a very, a professional type finish. I really feel like somebody's thought their poem out. I like how this has the inner rhyme and end rhyme. I like how the general tone of this poem is the idea of playing with words and playing with how they see your poetry or see different things in your poetry. Like the whole idea that, you know, like if you have five different people read the same poem, they'll get thoughts. I like the mischievousness of I get a giggle seeing the breaking of dreams. He said, she said, a tearing at the seams. Just a really great write and very well.
Absolutely. I like the play in this too. She hops right up front. In a sweet, magical form, I love to play, penning pieces in a different way that swing this way or that away. And you hit the note on the last two lines being the last two lines of the second of the third stanza as well to finish off, which brings it back to itself. But also a shake them up to break them up. And he said, she said, a tearing at the seams. So that hits on that note where Randy brought up the confrontation between two going at a loggerhead, so to speak. And then again, the facts that I watch what people go through and pen my frustration of what I see in you. So there's that note of being part of the sidelines and witnessing that which is going on, and then playing with it in form to have a little bit of fun at what's going on, literally, by offering up that which they themselves are not seeing in themselves. So I like that thought. All right, Pam. Where would you like
great
to
great comment
this?
There, Rex. up next, we have The Mercury Man is 1 Million Moons by Jim Bellamy. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
The Mercury Man is 1 Million Moons by Jim Bellamy. The Mercury Man is 1 Million Moons away. Serried in the hand, the graveyard world decays. Serried under fire, tombstones dry. Let's run, run, run. Let's run against the God's eyes. Run with men you do not know. Run, run, run. Never let go. Never cease till death must flow. Run, run, run. Never let grow. Some route laws pray by a cell in the spine. The Pentecostal daughter is a maiden doing time. Life schemes forever. Life praised as living names. Gone west with heroes slaughter. The ark of heaven's stains. Blood is a Bible. Blood is aspen, rhythm. Blood is a spectrum that shuns away the prism. Route laws, doubt laws, men inside the mind. The Pentecostal daughter is a maiden doing crimes. No man knows the heaven's reason. No man knows the heaven's treason. No man breathes beneath the mystic earth. No man is man and man is smirk. I am the skiff swing, here to cure a gold ring. I use this wing. Ah, murder me with your flavor and your power. Unsnap my city razor. La, cut a kissed wasp flower. The patient of Andromeda is interfused with swinged dog deaths and canine statues. Run with me, run with me. Let lob masters swing for the pirates, the thieves, the crows. Eh? And punk. All right, Pam. Try that one on the side.
Well, this was quite fun. To listen to you read. You did a great read of that. Oh, my goodness. There's something so very chaotic about this, but like that kind of organized chaos, the repetition of run, 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 really just hits hard. Just really, you know, just hard-hitting and thought-provoking imagery. I'm particularly drawn to the by a cell in the spine, the pentacle daughter is a maiden doing time, life schemes forever, life praises living names, gone west as heroes slaughter the ark of heaven stains. To me, I like how the whole idea of that stanza speaking on the idea of the thought that, you know, we can't judge people by necessarily the face they put out there. Because those who you think are the bad guys are often the good guys, and vice versa. I also like no man knows the heaven's reason, no man knows the heaven's treason, no man beneath the mystic earth, no man is man and man, and that is Smurf. Now, that's interesting to bring the Smurfs into it, though it's spelled differently, so it must be a different word. But it could be the same thing, just because the Smurfs, for the cartoon, digressing slightly here, was actually based after a real mythological figure, figures, you know, kind of like the elves, the fairies, and all that. Murder me with your flavor and your power, snap my city razor, cut a kissed wasp flower. You know what I really like about those lines? Out of all the lines in here, and is I feel like those ones have the most, like, I feel like those are the lines that Jim Morrison would be drawn to. And I really like how I'm going to go back to the stanza I was talking about before, and the no man knows. And that makes me think of the part in the Bible where it says no man can know the exact day and the exact time of when the earth will end. And to me, this that makes me me think of that, and it makes me think of the whole idea that oftentimes we try to accredit ourselves with a godlike power and knowledge of when the end of the world will come and what is right and what is wrong. But truly, you know, we don't necessarily know that. So really just a wonderful write and very well done.
All right, thank you, Dan. Yeah, this kind of caught me off a little bit until I got into the rhythm of it's almost a rap flow to it once you find the handle. And it does work really well. Some rap lords pray by some in the spine, the Pentateuchian daughter is a maiden due in time. Life schemes forever, life praises living names. Gone west is here, slaughter, the arc of heaven's veins. So he's got that nice touch of flow, right, where the needed rhyme is essential, and it keeps the point going forth. And there's a bunch of thought in there. It's kind of hints at, there's notations to God and the Bible. Blood is the Bible, blood is asking rhythm, blood is the section that shins wear the prism. Doubt laws, menace like a mind, the Pentateuch and daughters and maiden doing crime. See, they got the Pentateuch of daughter is a maiden doing crime. And then you roll into no man knows heaven's reason, no man knows heaven's season, no man breathes beneath the mystic earth, no man is man and man is smurf. And that's a different way of looking at it, and a nice touch there. And here to cure a gold ring. So there's kind of another touch to putting on the thought to how the church is run, so to speak, how it operates. And I like that the patient of Andromeda is interfused with swing dog death and canine statues. A touch to Sirius, the dog star, as well as Andromeda, the solar system. But also, it's going to notice the sort of run, never let love go. Never cease till death must flow. Run, never let love grow. It's on never let it go, but then again, never let it grow. So that it counter thoughts the notion, but it also hits on the sort of Greywood world decay, buried under fire, buried in the hand. So, and tombstones dry. So, there is a notice thought to let lobbed masses swing for the pirates to feast the crows. And kind of walking outside the norm of that which you see growing. And maybe the idea here is to actually, even if nobody gets out of here alive, the thought is maybe you should do it your own way rather than with a mob mentality.
I like that. That last part of your comment made me think, of course, of the song that no one here gets out alive. I like that you brought up the part, you know, run, never let love go, run, you know, like how it was that kind of contradiction of each other, you know, as if, you know, the was necessarily the right or wrong answer, but individual based. At least, you know, that's what it made me think of. But really great observations there, Rex.
All right.
That cracks me up. All right. Up next, we have Hooray for Hollywood by Chinaski. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So, here we go.
And you thought that we would listen through long tube cinemas like permeable eggshell infants thrown into dark shadows upon white glowing sheets. We swallowed you whole, tinseltone echoes panning in, out, rotating every frozen frame to paint our lives for us. And we sit, flipping ourselves inside out, full of arrogance, tight-lipped, impatient, for it to finally end, patting the backs of the pirouettes and protagonists, saving us from ourselves. Yet, Everything becomes vague, dizzy scripts of allure, needs of the socket void eyes. As the skin swells interrupted and hives, there is no more distinction between body parts encroaching sounds of threatening, mocking monotonous voices. The night is ebony carbon dreams, throwing spiral and stars burnt into our memory. We let the slow whipping light through, squeeze in imagination, people after people, film after film, skull bone death, feet in porcelain makeup, beautifully displayed upon screens, rigged us with desire. Our desert pillows become sleepless anticipation, bloodthirsty, stretching its fine sand in all directions. Yes, the garden kiss under arched roses, making us weep, his forehead leaning forward, lips gently catching rockets as they fall, jostling jade, ravishing the moment. Prisoners caught in cages resembling theaters testify into hungry leisure. Thirsty sailors forced into female roles, soon becoming our darling hero. Incredible to fight. Luxy towers call themselves a country and then elected it president. City map full of cheerful twitters. Everywhere people. Eyes blankly cover silver screens, ride into work in carpool lanes, brainwashed. As the last scene enters the eyes, rolls down the cheeks with farewell.
Great read, Chinaski. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam. Hooray for Hollywood. Hooray for Hollywood. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, this is really good. I always enjoy and appreciate Chinaski's reading. I think he has kind of a deep poet-type feel to him with the short, impactful lines, the use of imagery, and the intensity of his reads. I mean, just there's some really great parts to pick out starting from the beginning. And you thought that we would listen through long tube cinemas like permanent eggshell infants thrown into dark shadows upon white glowing sheets. I like how it expands from there, and the whole idea of Hollywood used to influence people, movies to influence people, as if they could so easily, you know, so easily crack. Let's see, what else? Flipping ourselves inside out, full of ignorance, tight-lipped, impatient, for it finally to end, patting the backs of the pirouetting protagonist, saving us from ourselves. We so badly oftentimes, I think, when we watch a movie, when we read a book, want to see ourselves in the protagonist. And I like how this gets progressively, like there's consistently a fairly dark, there's a dark tone, but it gets more and more darker. The night is ebony carbon dreams, throwing spiraling stars burnt into our memories. We let the slow whipping light through, squeezing imagination, people after people, film after film, skull bone death, beating porcelain makeup. That whole idea that the ugliness of life and death and sex is represented within those lines. I like seeing a map full of cheerful twitters everywhere, people, because I feel like, you know, that brings in modern times the idea of Twitter, tweeting, something I never use, but I know a lot of people do. Thirsty sailors forced into female roles and become our darling heroes. Incredible surfite looksy towers call themselves a country and then elected it president. There's some really thought-provoking lines there, and I like the thought on how oftentimes, you know, Hollywood and society force people into roles they're not necessarily meant to have. You know, just a really great write that does give me the whole idea of how people think we're incapable of thinking for ourselves, and so therefore tell us what to think through the the Hollywood voice. So I thought this was very well done.
Oi, quit making so much noise and go sit down. Anyway, thank you, Pam. I know we hit it up with Hooray for Hollywood, but I'm going to go with a touch of sarcasm and irony. Because that opening stanza hits on the, and you thought that we would listen through long tube cinemas like perennial eggshell infants thrown into dark shadows upon white glowing sheets. There's that notion of, we're supposed to heed and know and fully take the thoughts of those that spout from those screens as the angle that we as society should be walking through. And he hits on a number of things that thought with the patting the backs of the pirouetting protagonist, saving us from ourselves. Nice touch. But yet everything becomes vague, dizzy scripts of allure, needs of the socket, void eyes. As the skin swells into erupting hives, there is no more distinction between body parts, encroaching sounds of threatening, mocking, monotonous voices. It is that throwback to the crap that's being pummeled out is just there as the allure, because the notion of this stanza here, yes, the garden kiss, under arched roses making us weep, his forehead leaning forward, lips gently catching rockets as they fall, jostling jade, ravishing the moment. There is not that thought anymore of film producing the idea of a storyline other than huge smash-ups, lots of naked porn, so to speak. They've extended the categories. Whereas, you can go to 14 on this, you can go to 17 on that. Hey, this borders on X, but we're going to leave it as a PG-17. There's that sort of a going too far and putting too much in without actually offering up anything except a melange of color, explosions, and fiercity, as opposed to a decent storyline. So for me, it's kind of like, I know he took the film spec to The Quiet Vampires, and it does hit on that because they were used as supposed to be an entertainment mode when they first came out. And do they still entertain? To a point, yeah, but the distinction between what was once and what now is vast. So now we're being thrown with the idea of, hey, we don't have to act. We've got CGI. We can make them fly. We can make them swim in water like fish. We can make them breathe in space where there is no air. We can do all sorts of things. So the reality has gone a little bit too further than it should have. And I thought the farewell was a nice touch to finish, and offering up the voice in a kind of vampirish note.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yep, I have to agree. I do think there are more modern movies that do have great storylines, but I think that you're right about that, too oftentimes in modern movies, they depend too much on action and computer-generated graphics. But they also, have their place. But it's all about balance. It's all about using them correctly, using them to enhance an already good film, preferably made good by a strong storyline and strong acting. So great observations there, Rex. And do you have somebody, dragging around a body behind you or something?
A damn dog. Fine, get out.
Oh, my goodness. God. Too funny. And all right. Up next, we have All Inclusive Jim Morrison by Ruth M. Martz. and it goes like this. Although I see that there are actually 13, it's hard for me to pick the young lion from his word. Although I may not make it to the LMP in March, I cannot separate the fragments from the whole. Father did that from Jim's birth when he asked about his parents. He stated they were dead. A baritone, his range was strained. Even when he screamed, he changed the scene. He was the scene simply because he was. People are strange. That's an understatement from the Lizard King. When he sings, the whole world rings from all his glorious lines. The greatest poet who has ever lived buried with a writer's pride in the most elite part of the Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris, France. Among the best and greatest poets of the world, Wilde, Proust, Balzac, just to name a few, most visited grave, he was slave to the miseries of life. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like that opening stanza. Although I see that there are actually 13, it's hard for me to pick the young lion from his words. A nice note to the fact that I put up 13 prompts and to sit there and hit on sort of the young lion from his words and the offering. That was a nice touch, a great way to open up. Then again, I cannot separate the fragments from the whole. Then offering up the thought about Jim and his parents. And, yeah, he did at one point spend were dead. His father was, he was a Navy man. So they did some traveling across places when it came to assignments. And I do believe his father was involved with the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which got the U.S. heavily involved in Vietnam in 65, I think it was. Which hits on the, I like that thought, a baritone. His range was strange. Even when he screamed, he changed the scene. He was the scene simply because he was. A lot of people forget. He crafted himself out of the whiskey of go-go back in the day because they were the house band. And they finally got booted after he did the one song. That he played it, they played it that one night. He didn't show up originally. So during the break, the band had to go find him. And he was a little bit loaded. They got him up the stage. And he finally started belting it out. And everybody in place stopped, including the go-go dancers, when he got into his voice and the song itself, doing his little little dances and the notations. That they said it was kind of magical in the moment because nothing else, you couldn't hear nothing else except his voice in that moment. Well, that was their last night at the Whiskey of Go-Go, except it wasn't, since it was in the, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, still had a couple of shows to finish out the rest of the week. So they finished out the rest of the week before they got fired. And then they hit the big time. Where else they got? No, she drops in Lizard King. I like the thought of the glorious lines. Drops in where he's buried, the Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris. And he is surrounded by some well-known people like Wilde, Proust, and Balzac. So he's in great company. What do you think?
Yeah, that was a great comment there, Rex. I have to agree with you. There's just some really strong lines throughout. But, yeah, particularly that part where a baritone, his range was strange. And I like that she used the word strange a couple times in reference to the song, People Are Strange. And I like how she brings out his personality and his talent. The greatest poet who has ever lived buried with a writer's pride. And I think that line, the writer's pride, is particularly important because, you know, I think probably being somebody that came from an average, you know, family, you know, you might have, you know, I don't know, like I just, you get this kind of feeling sometimes to be a songwriter, to be a rock and roll superhero and idol, and then to be buried with and be recognized as one of the greatest poets alive. I think it just is a wonderful nod towards him. And I'm glad she brought that up. I also like that she says, it's hard for me to pick the young lion from his words. I thought young lion was a great way to describe Jim Morrison. I like that she says people are strange. That's an understatement for the listening. That whole idea of, and it's funny because, when he writes that song, People Are Strange, it's kind of almost like an acknowledgement of himself as well, because he did have a very stand-out-there personality. And I can only imagine, I remember I was watching a video where they were interviewing family members of his. And can you imagine what it must have been like to have the kind of mind that Jim Morrison had and grow up with a very strict military father? I really like that she delves so much into her appreciation for Jim Morrison and his poetic voice. I thought this was very well done.
Well said, Anne. All right, well, where do we go next?
All right. Up next we have Who's They by Liquid Mind Forever. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Who's They by Liquid Mind Forever. They said, bangs and hammers, rankles and stammers flaring, fails to pin the tail or set sail or jail culprits in the chair mail hailing. They said, a sails and rails, but they said pales in the might of the round table. Holy Grail fails miserably to demonstrate, but agitates and constipates response able. They said, oh, isn't that a crime? They said, we shouldn't judge a man by his color. They said, it's inhumane what we did to the Indians. The greatest crime ever committed, omitted, or acquitted, they said, as the greatest offender, pretender, defender of the tongue. They said, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. They said, the only good nigger is a dead nigger. They said, women are only good for one thing. I am they. You are they, too. Do you criticize, ostracize, aggrandize? You ask who? Anyone, any group, any church, any country, any leader? If you do, you are the they. Do you watch television? Do you go to the movies? Do you read and or write poetry, music, books, movie scripts? Do you ever quit? Isn't that a shame? Our government's to blame. They should be punished? That should be punishable by death? Have you ever witnessed animal abuse, child abuse, gender abuse? Have you ever, after witnessing, said, who could just sit by and why doesn't somebody do? Our world's going to the dogs? Of course you have. And so have I and him over there. Have you ever heard, where's God? God's dead. The parents to blame? They said, removes culpability and responsibility for multiplicity of crime, of omission, and crimes of commission. Do you visit Indian museums? Do you visit the Old South Plantation? Do you flip the station on the television to find something more conflicted? Have you heard or perhaps said, there's nothing good on television? All you see at the movies is horror and violence. Sex is everywhere. Movies, television, news. We get what? We pray for, pay for, crave for. Remember, they said, be careful what you pray for. You might get it. And they were right on the money. You got me? And I'm here to remind us, we are the they we hate. And poem.
All right, Pam.
Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. Yeah, just a powerful line. First of all, on a technical level, as always, Liquid Mind Forever has such a mind that good mind for doing the inner rhyme and the end rhyme. I like how she varies the length and shape and placement of her stanzas as to create a sense of movement. I also like how this isn't necessarily pointing fingers at one specific group of people, but rather at everyone, at ourselves, at herself included. You know, to think about the small things. You know, do we hate in that horrible, violent way, you know, that so many people do? No. But are we looking at the little choices that we make, what we watch on TV, the museums that we visit? I also like how she touches on what you were talking about earlier, how oftentimes movies are too much about the horror and the violence and that sex is everywhere. I like a good horror movie. I like, and if the sex fits in with the storyline, the problem is there's a certain lack of appreciation for the beauty of sex and what it's supposed to represent. You know, that idea of love and connection and pleasure, and what I found particularly interesting is that she brings up, have you heard, where's God? God's dead. The parents to blame. They said removes culpability and responsibility in a multiplicity of crime of omission and crimes of commission. I feel like in those lines there's that idea of we will always find someone else to blame, whether it's our parents or whoever we can, for what we should be standing up and taking responsibility for. And I also like she says, remember what you pray. They said, be careful what you pray for. And they were right on the money. And I like that she put right on the money, because I felt like there's a really strong duality in that the representation of that line. And those who have the money make the rules. Those who have the money get their prayers answered. So really just an excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. I think the best thing that Liquid offers up here is the criticality and the functionality of mentality. It's on those notions of history. History is always written by the winners. It never sits as a truth be told to that which actually happened. And that's part of the problem. And the sort of we shouldn't this, it's inhumane that the only good, and women are only, that is all falls into a seriality of what she hits on that first, last line on the of the first stanza. Fails miserably to commiserate, agitates and constipates response-able. That response-able always also hits on the note of responsible. It constipates. You agitate the masses, and then you think this thought. I think that's what the general idea of what she's offering up here. You get these little notions of questions, and the idea is not enough, people offering the questions or questioning the thoughts of those who designate this, that, or the other thing of who and what, where, why, and where things are supposed to be done. And she hits on that. They said, removes culpability and responsibility for a multiplicity of crime and omission and crimes of commission. And the idea of only the little people get punished. The larger ones get to write the truths that is sold as ease on television, the movies, within the news, and the they, it's your first and the bottom end, we hate. It is everybody and everything putting out their medial crassness, teaching us to hate us, ourselves and each other, so that we are always at our throats while the rest get to do what they want.
Great comment there, Rex. I really liked that you brought up that too often it's the little people that pay the price. So, great observations. All right. And up next we have Strange Bedfellows by Eric Svensson. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Strange bedfellows. Once opulent emerald green curtain cascade, now threadbare. Skeletal weeping willows stripped by winter. Hoar frost laments invasion, sneers at miserable misogamy. Clammy cleave weaves deathly hallows. Beaver submarines, red October elsewhere. Silvery dam surface vacant of feathered craft. Egyptian geese flown to the Crimean Peninsula. Misty waxen wane of poplar trees further afield. Miserable mist misogamy blights. Strange bedfellows. War and peace at loggerheads again. Off-kilter falsetto fugue spews fear. Once opulent emerald green curtain of certainty, threadbare again. Skeletal weeping willow tresses will but burst in spring again, won't they? Red October, beaver submarines will return to home base, won't they? Egyptian geese will survive the Crimean Peninsula to fly down south again, won't they? Riders of the storm, mask Mardi Gras pantomime presents war games. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown, like poets without answers. Stranger things yet to come. At least we know spring's opulent emerald green will return, won't it? Hasn't history shown us that itchy trigger fingers make for strange bedfellows? Isn't this the strangest life you've ever known? Children believe fire burns by touching flames. And when the drums of war have reached a fever pitch, and the blood boils with hate, and the mind is closed, the leader will have no need in seizing the rights of the citizenry. Rather, the citizenry infused with fear and blinded by patriotism will offer up all their rights unto the leader and do it gladly so. Julius Caesar, in Perms.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for that sound bite. It is truly appreciated. And Pam, what you got?
Well, as always, just a wonderful SoundCloud by Eric. First of all, I really like that sexy-looking picture of Jim Morrison. So very cool there. I like that he takes us through history, a history of war. You know, that at the end he mentions Julius Caesar, and then going back up, You know, he mentions the submarine, the Red October. Great nod to the Jim Morrison song, Riders of the Storm, with the lines, Riders of the Storm, masked Mardi Gras pantomime presents war games into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown. You know, I like how he incorporates the Jim Morrison lines there, and I like the masked Mardi Gras pantomime presents war games in the idea of how the right kind of so-called acting will present the idea that of war being of being fun. You know, I also really like, hasn't history shown us that itchy trigger fingers make for strange bedfellows? Isn't this the strangest life you've ever known? Children believe fire burns by touching flames. You know, I just really found that a powerful thought in the idea that, you know, hasn't history shown us? And yeah, it has, and yet we keep repeating it. The citizenry infused with fear and blinded by patriotism will offer up all their rights into the leader and do it gladly so. I like that he ended with that quote by Julius Caesar. And, you know, it's a really great nod towards the idea that, you know, to me, you know, while patriotism is a wonderful thing, and I think it's important to be faithful in all aspects of life, including to your country, but to at what point does your faith mean the death of yourself or the death of, you know, of what is right? Like, just because something is a law doesn't necessarily make it right. I also really like the imagery in once opulent emerald green curtain of certainty threadbare again, skeletal weeping willow tresses will bud burst and spring again, won't they? To me, that imagery takes me to the emerald city of the Wizard of Oz and all those gifts that could have been given, all the knowledge, you know, the brains, the heart, you know, all of that, that, you know, the way home, it's gone. It's stripped away by the violence of war. So really just a wonderful write and very well done.
Nice to say, Pam. Thank you. There's a repetition of this emerald green curtain cascade now threadbare, then once opulent emerald green curtain of certainty threadbare again, and he hits on the note of the skeletal weeping willow stripped by winter, skeletal weeping willow tressed will bud burst in spring again, won't they? And then the Red October and the Beaver submarine hits on that note too. But I thought that the first one, Beaver submarines, Red October elsewhere. There's a double hint of thought. You have an underlying note of crypticism and that, which you can run your mind down into different things. And also the thought of miserable mist, misogamy, blight. The thought of haters of marriage. Another thought to that, which is going on within this too, because he offers up strange bedfellows, war and peace of loggerheads again, as the opening note to that second stanza. But he also had also threw in a little Harry Potter. He got the clammy cleave weaves, deathly hallows. The Riders of the Storm was a nice touch. And then he hits on a couple of lines from the Riders. Into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown. Like a dog without a bone, an actor out alone, Riders on the Storm. Now the back end of this, with the citizenry infused with fear, blinded by patriotism. See, that is a nice touch to a little bit more criticism, because of the fear porn that's been rolled out for the last 2 years. Why not dig into it a little harder and offer it up as patriotism? And you know what? You're willing to give up some more of your freedom, so they don't even have to take it. It's being drawn off easily and will never be given back. until we're all slaves once more. All right, where would you like to go?
All right, well, before we go on to the next poem, I'd like to welcome Robbie to the show. And welcome, Robbie. Glad you could join us.
Hey, Robbie.
Hello. Hey there, Rex. Hey, Pam.
Good to hear you.
I've been having a whirlwind of a day, so I thought I'd call in to wind down a little bit.
We're glad to have you.
Nice. Oh, absolutely.
Did you get to hear Rex's piece by chance?
I didn't get to hear it like the whole thing, but I heard enough to be able to get some commentary going in my mind, and I enjoyed hearing Eric using the framework that he was here, like with Jim Morrison. I'm a fan of Jim Morrison. I had pointed someone else out here to the American Dream or American Prayer album that he has on archive.org, and there's a couple spots here that really snagged me, like, oh, that quote by Julius Caesar, it's so true. And I don't like to usually use more modern or kind of pop culture references or compare them to that. It's, sometimes it seems that, you know, maybe they're not the best quotes, but I did remember from one of the Star Wars movies, one of the more recent ones, where Amidala, I think, she was saying that, well, is this how democracy ends, not with a whimper but with applause? And he captured that point with the Julius Caesar quote. Is so often, you know, things are melded and molded and shaped in ways where, you know, people are gladly giving away their freedom, and they think they're doing it for a good reason, but it's just for the sake of control and for the, you know, for expansionism or whatever the case might be. It's like you could open a whole hornet's nest when you start to go into that. One thing I noticed with that. This is something that I haven't heard from Eric before, but he used some repetitions of lines. And I thought, oh, that's it's always nice to hear a poet use a little bit different format than they usually use. And yeah, he had some callbacks, some repetitions in his phrases there. So it was nice to hear him using a format that was a little bit different.
Oh, absolutely. I like those lines because he switched them up just a little bit enough to get a little bit different and deeper meaning out of the second and third time he used them, but they work well.
Yeah.
All right, Pam, where are we going now?
All right. Up next we have Just One More Piece by Lowell. And we have a SoundCloud for that. And here we go.
Just One More Piece, a poem by Lowell. The best of me, mistakenly, was always yours to take. Drip-feeding love, such precious love, I prayed you'd not forsake. Was warned I'd find a callous mind, a heartless Romeo, a man who breaks the hearts he takes, of those who love him so. Insatiable, despicable, you clawed me to the bone. Just one more piece, another piece, you would not let alone. You wore me out without a doubt, till there was nothing left, just emptiness and loneliness, to leave me here bereft. Drip-feeding love, I hoped that love would flourish and you'd find what could have been if you had seen the dream I had in mind. End poem.
Great read, Law. Thank you very much. The SoundCloud is really appreciated. And she went with, it may have been in pieces, but I gave you the best of me. Robbie, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
This one was really powerful, and there's a couple of things that reminded me of right away. I don't know if this would be something that the Pope would maybe necessarily agree on, or if there was anything that she was aiming for, but the characteristics of the person in here reminded me a bit of a narcissist, because it's funny, like I've never really considered about narcissism before, heard about it much, but I've known like two people now recently that they talk about dealing with narcissists in their lives, and been in politics recently about, you know, about narcissism, like in the U.S. in the recent elections, and it struck me as that because the characteristics here, it's just that wearing out of the person, just kind of using them as an object, right? It's like the other person's image is the only image that matters, and their pleasure. But also the such a powerful image to me here, drip feeding love, and I was like, wow. When I heard that, it was just like, it just made me imagine what that would be like if someone was just like doling out love to you in these like precious little drips, you know, kind of at their own mercy, you know. And it's just, especially the way she ends it off, I pray you not forsake. It's like, you know, they're giving this love in little drips, and even that they're hoping that they won't stop, like the IV drip of love, you know. that was like, wow, that just hit me like a hammer, that part.
Well said. Thank you, Robbie. All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, I have to agree with Robbie that, you know, first of all, that this does come across as talking about a narcissistic personality, but also on like a kind of almost a codependent personality, someone who so desperately needs to change somebody, who needs to be there for somebody. I don't know if that's the codependent, but, you know, like too oftentimes people run into somebody and, you know, or start a relationship with somebody where there's warning signs and ignore the warning signs because they feel like even if they're true, I'll be the one person to change them. And especially when it comes to narcissism and abusers, you're not going to be the one person to change them. And I did like the use of the drip feeding love. You know, well, and of course, as always, she has great rhyme and flow, inner rhyme and end rhyme. To me, the drip feeding love is giving that just enough of a hint of love, just enough of a taste of love to bring them coming back for more. You know, as if those little drips could heal it. Them from the wounds that the abuser gave to them. And I really like, you wore me out without a doubt till there was nothing left, just emptiness and loneliness to leave me here bereft. And I like till there was nothing left because it's that whole idea of completely losing yourself, completely losing the person that you once were, the belief in yourself, the strength in yourself, the ability to love yourself and even to love other people is oftentimes just chipped away at. So I thought this was a powerful write and very well done.
Well, well said, you guys. Now I've got nothing left to speak on. Well, except for one thing. This could actually make a song out of this. I think the insatiable, despicable, you clawed me to the bone, just one more piece, another piece you would not let alone, would be that chorus line to emphasize the voice and the piece itself. I too like that angle with the drip feeding look that she used it to open up and then finish out with that thought that expanded on the bottom end of it. And go with, if you make this with music, I'd go with something maybe a little bluesy or something with a bit of a jazz feel to it, kind of something with a moaning sax in the background. Thank you, Lowell.
Ooh, great observation there, Rex. I like that you brought up that it has a very song-like quality to it and the bluesy beat. So, very cool. All right. And up next we have You Ever Really Seen a Face in the Rain by Moshi 18. And Robbie, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. Have you ever really seen a face in the rain? Let me infect your mind, raise the dead, and boil your wine. The stage is set on fire, forget the day, forget the crime. I'll steal your kitchen gods, I'll kill your priests and rape your hours. The dogs are on our trail, eat his bread and balm the towers. I'll bring you filthy coats, I'll grind the bones of sacred goats. This cancer's gone too far, slaughter the crew and sink the boats. I've been to Jaffa's gates, I'll vomit truths and mock the fates. My eyes have birthed the night, the spell's been lost, the hour's late. Oh, and the prompt, it says, if my poetry aims to achieve anything, it's to deliver people from the limited ways in which they see and feel.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Robbie. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Yeah, this is, first of all, great read there, Robbie. Really a thought-provoking and powerful write by Moshi 18. I feel like there's a real, well, obviously, you know, there's a sense of destruction, a sense of destruction of, you know, of faith, of spirituality. And I'll bring you filthy coats, I'll grind the bones of sacred goats. This cancer's gone too far, slaughter the crew and sink the boats. A great rhyme and flow there. And I like how the sacred goats, make me think of those who are not the sheep, those who are not necessarily the followers. And I'll grind the bones, I thought was a great line because makes me think of the whole idea of Jack and the Beanstalk and the giant face. I like the use of the word vomit. And the reason I like that is because, honestly, it's a difficult word for me to read or hear. I have a very... very just like reaction. Like anytime I see that word, I get nauseous. And so to me, I see that word and I think, that is an ugly word. Like there's no freaking way you can't say that is an ugly word. And so sometimes that's what we need to see in poetry, is ugliness. And so just a really thoughtful write and very well done.
Well said there, Pam. Thank you very much. And Robbie, you got to read it. How about you?
It's like almost like an exorcism of feelings, because, and I use that word because it's the images that he uses are so, visceral and brutal. Like Pam was saying, the use of the word vomit. And that's the thing. Like he says at one point, this cancer's gone too far. Slaughter the crew and sink the boats. And it's one of those all-for-nothing approaches. Kind of like when you, he mentions cancer. It's like when you get cancer and you have to go for like the absolute heart chemo, to get rid of it, because it's just such a nasty cancer, and you feel like the cure is almost worse than the disease, right? And that's kind of what it feels like here, where you it's that metaphysical action that's just so brutal that, but it's brutal because what you're trying to get rid of is just so, it's just so brutal as well.
You're absolutely right. It is. And I'm going to go off the cliff. I like that opening line. Let me infect your mind. Now there's duality in that retrospect as the poet himself offering up the thoughts, but also if you walk on the thoughts that he's offered up, that sort of a let me infect your mind could be the devil, so to speak, Satan, or whatever name you attribute to the deep and dark one. See, the stage is set on fire. Forget the day. Forget the crime. I'll steal your kitchen gods. I'll kill your priests. I'll bring you filthy coats. I'll grind the bones of sacred goats. This cancer's gone too far. Slaughter the crew and sink the boats. The cancer's gone too far. I think that's a reference to, if you're going with the devil aspect, that would be the thought of free will and having soul, so to speak. And I've been to Jaffa's Gate. There's a whole lot of biblical references that run. You've got Jonah, Solomon, and there's the oranges, of course, and there's some other thoughts that go along with the angle of Jaffa's Gate. And I'll vomit the truth. You know what? I'll tell you what you really are and mock the faith. Hey, mine. And then he hits on that note, my eyes have birthed the night. The spell's been lost the hours late. It's almost that note of the dawn awakens at that point, and hey, I'll see you on the rebound when it comes darkness once more. All right, Pam.
All right, great observations there, Rex. Up next we have Kettles by Naomi Sarah. And she put this on the board, and she says that it fits with the it may have been in pieces, but I gave you the best of me. And it goes like this. I watch the snow falling as you sit there so still across from me yet so far, silently skimming through messages on your phone. Hear you laugh and tease before you quickly ran out to buy me a shiny red kettle. First day you came for coffee because I boiled water in a pot. I slip on my boots, hat, coat, mittens, and scarf that keeps tightening around my throat, drag the shovel to the door, step out into more silence, breathing in just more cold, wishing you still bought me kettles and saw me. And not only that the snow had been cleared away from the steps and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Well, this was kind of chilly. I watch the snow falling as you sit there so still, across from me, yet so far, silently skimming through messages on your phone. Well, that kind of hits on the sad note of today of, hey, it's so easy to communicate with dozens and dozens of people, and I don't even have to talk to them yet. You're not talking to the one who is actually across the kitchen table from you. And that's what the laugh and tease before you quickly run out and buy me a shiny red kettle. That's the first day you came for coffee because I boiled water in a pot. And then it still hits on that note of loneliness in the moment and the sourness in the relationship itself. And how about you, Robbie?
I was interested in how I always like when you take an everyday object and build a whole world around it. And I like that because we usually in poetry, or often in poetry, that like when you have a big subject or you have the main subject of the poem, it's like a very prominent thing. Like it's a distinct feeling, it's a more prominent object or such. And but in this case, it's a shiny red kettle, and it's always been interesting to me in poetry to build an entire poem, like an entire thought process around an everyday object. And when you were mentioning about the phone, you know, and how it's easy to communicate, and yet we don't talk to the ones we should, you're reminding me of how I keep hearing more and more about how these days now, like, you see people, especially younger people, they communicate with each other. They're literally across the room, like like the kitchen table, you know, like a small, they'll be at a small kitchen table and they're texting each other. And it scares the hell out of me, because what I've heard is that, like, it's that time of life when your brain is wiring itself. So the way you learn things is the way you learn things pretty much permanently, right? And you say to yourself, how can they be texting each other when they're across they're across from each other, literally, at the kitchen table? And that's the thing, is that's literally how they're learning to communicate. And to me, like, the implications of that are pretty damn scary. And I mean, that's deriving a lot out of, like, one part of this poem, but when you had mentioned that, that's where my thoughts were starting to go. And also the one other thing is, it just came to my mind, I've been starting to study painting in that, and kind of what came to my mind is I've been thinking about this poem is kind of one of those little pastiche sort of paintings that's very static but powerful, and it's kind of like one of those really impactful moments. I could just imagine, like, an oil pastel of, you know, someone at a chair, and they're on the phone, and the person's, like, only a couple of feet from them, and just that kind of very powerful, still moment.
Ooh.
Boy, I'm talking a lot today. Blah, 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 blah.
No, well said. Because you know what? You mentioned that that shiny red kettle as the emphasis and the motif, and I thought of a toy, you know, the shiny red wagon you get for the kid, because they incessantly talk about wanting it, so you get it for them to shut them up. And that kind of offers up that note with the shiny red kettle is, hey, you're boiling water in a pot, I'll get you a shiny red kettle. I can still sit here and text across the table, and you got a shiny new toy. Play with it. How about you, Pam?
Yeah, great observations there. You know, Robbie, I like hearing you talk a lot, because I really like to listen to your thoughts and how you see a poem. And I do like that you focused in on the red kettle and the simple object. And I think that does make for the center of the poem in a strong way. And because, you know, it kind of is like a still life painting. You know, I love still life photography, still life painting, where just the right object place evokes emotions and nostalgia and memory. That first stanza really sets the tone in the whole idea that this relationship is cold. He's too busy looking at that phone, looking at those messages, to really pay attention to what's going on in the real world around them. And I like that this takes us back in memory to a time when things were happier, when there was laughter and the sharing of that red kettle. And then I like how she goes outside and she uses the cold outside, the snow outside, for that kind of extended metaphor for the idea of the coldness of the relationship. When Robbie, you mentioned, also when you mentioned the painting, like how sometimes a simple painting can be profound, it makes me think of this painting where a girl, and I'm sure there's more like this, but and I can't remember who painted it, but it's a picture of a girl sitting and reading a book. You know, and it's just such a simple moment that just stands out. But with for Naomi's right, I just think this is really powerful. And what makes it powerful is its use of simple language and simple imagery so that we, the reader, can relate to it. So very well done. Did we lose Rex?
Thanks.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Where do we go now? I was just dropping a little dirty decaf on the board.
Yeah, well, just make sure you keep that dirty decaf away from me. You can give it all to Jess.
I haven't had decaf
for years. Aromatic like a good Colombian.
What is that coffee where it's made from coffee beans that they pick out of this wild cat's poop?
I think that's meerkat. Yeah, they eat the ripened beans and then they crap it out and then they pick through the crap for the beans and within the process of it going through the digestive system, it infuses and inflects some extra lively flavor to it, and it's one of the most expensive coffees in the world.
Yep.
Paying extra for poop.
Yes. It's already been digested once and shat out the other end. Have it now as a drinking tollage to your morning awakening call. True shit on.
Oh, my goodness.
You should be
I'll
in advertising, Rex.
Yeah, especially for poop coffee.
Oh God, that was almost too easy. It could write itself.
Right? Oh my gosh! There you go. All right. So up next we have Creating Healthy Space by Zoo's Protege and Rex. Will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. Creating Healthy Space by Zoo's Protege. He sat there, fidgeting with his phone, refreshing the app, waiting for her to read the message. The green dot was there. Why wasn't she answering? I bet she's out there having fun, whatever she's doing. Maybe she is chatting with her 15-year-old about boys, about how her first kiss at her age felt just as awkward as it was for her, providing comfort and understanding for her daughter's experience. Or maybe she is browsing the cereal aisle at the grocery store, trying to decide that perfect late-night snack. My personal favorite is Fruity Pebbles, or I like to mix Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Golden Grahams in a bowl together. It's delicious. There should be no rules to breakfast, or snack time for that matter. I'm willing to bet that she's listening to YouTube music while she's in the shower, washing away the stresses of the day, savoring this brief moment of solitude that she's been looking forward to all day. I wonder what song she's playing. Maybe it's Freedom by Kygo. That one's the best. It really speaks to the heart, you know? And boom. All right, Pam, what do you got?
Yeah, I thought this was just really a wonderful, thoughtful write, and you did a great read there. I like that it's looking back and wondering about someone that you used to be in communication with, maybe someone you used to be close to, you know, and thinking about what are they doing now? I'm guessing, you know, that the idea of the voice used here is looking at the idea of somebody who they used to know their daily habits, you know, the way they talk to their children, what they listen to as far as music. But I like that with this, they give us information about the subject being thought about, but also the person themselves. You know, like the idea of browsing the subject being thought about is possibly browsing the cereal aisle, and then they throw in, my personal favorite is Fruity Pebbles, or I like to mix Cinnamon Toast Crunch and golden grams in a bowl together. Really just wonderful, straightforward imagery in the whole idea of individuality. And I like that he ends with the thought of listening to music, because I truly believe that it's music that identifies a person's personality the most. Like, one of my favorite questions to ask a person when I'm first getting to know them is what kind of music do you listen to? What kind of music moves you, and why? I mean, I know those are three questions, but, you know, they're to me important questions, because it's really how and when you get to know a person. So I think this is just a great write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Robbie, how about you?
Well, I laughed right at the beginning, because I thought Creating Healthy Space was a supremely ironic title to read after we were talking about poop coffee. The irony of that was just struck me so much.
Yeah, you didn't
brush your
teeth
this morning. We need
to clean
up this space now.
Oh. That coffee is just a little too strong.
Yeah, a little too bitter. But on to the poem. The thing that got me in the beginning, when I was talking about, like, the green dot, why wasn't she answering? And then in the next stanza, she's speculating about what she's doing. That really caught my attention, because so often, and that's one of the things I don't like about, I actually hate the, like, virtual communication, like, unless it's necessary. It's too easy to put your own context into something, and especially when you're antsy, like, about someone not talking to you for a while. And, like, I really keep that in mind. I all the time. Like, I know often, like, someone won't talk to you for a while, but especially if you know in advance that there's things going on with them, sometimes people, even knowing that, they forget that, you know, she's going through a divorce or blah, blah, blah. And they forget that, and it's just that human tendency. I guess it's a bit of the ego thing. I'm not saying everybody that does that is egotistical, but it's just that kind of self-preservation, I guess. It's ego in the sense of self-preservation. That, you know, you're wondering, why isn't this person talking to me? And people forget, you know, they're going through this and that, so maybe that's why they're not calling me. They assume, you know, they tend to assume more so other things than some things. So that part reminded me of that. And it also made me think about how varied things can be with that. That it says, I'm willing to bet that she's listening to YouTube music while she's in the shower, and then maybe she's listening to this and that. And I like the end. Maybe it's written by Kygo. That's one of the best. It really speaks to the heart, you know. And it was a very wistful sort of a ending to the poem. And I'm gonna have to listen to that song to see how she related that to the poem. And I guess sometimes, especially as modern day poets, we have so much cynicism implanted in us. You know, it's nice to see an ending that is more uplifting in that, especially when it's about, they're not communicating as much in that, you know, and so often with us in the modern age and how cynical we can be, before the ending comes, we think, this ending's going to have a bad ending. It's going to be dark. But I really like that change of pace, that, this is a wistful and uplifting ending. So that's what I got out of it. And I'm kind of coming in just dashing, but I'll be off now. I just wanted to phone in for about half an hour or 40 minutes or so, and I might end up, if I was on for much longer, I might end up getting hung up on anyway, because my telephone provider here usually does their line tests around 2 o'clock in the morning, as I found out the hard way the first time I called here.
No problem. We thank you for coming on board for whatever time you can give us.
Yep.
It's always good hearing from you.
Thanks.
And I'm going to go a little, I'm going to walk off the cliff again. This kind of reminds me of Naomi, especially when you offer up creating healthy space, because you know what? Healthy space for these days for people is where they can hide and cower and not live within the life itself that's going on. That opening stanza kind of hits on the same thing. He sat there fidgeting with his phone, refreshing the app, waiting for her to read the message. The green dot was there. Why wasn't she answering? There's almost a stalker note to that stanza. And then the next couple of stanzas, they're all about supreme familiarity, as though he's dug really deep into her life, but really isn't so much that big a part of the life, even though he offers up thoughts to himself. My personal favorite is pretty prevalent. Or I like to mix Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Golden Grahams in a bowl together. It's delicious. There should be no rules for breakfast or snack time for that matter. And then again, hits on that one line, I'm willing to bet she's listening to YouTube music while she's in the shower, washing away the stresses of the day, savoring this brief moment of solitude that she has been looking forward to all day. He knows that, yet he still messages, sits there, waits for an answer back, and then ponders what's going on because she isn't answering back. So there's something dysfunctional within the narrative itself. And a bit chilly, too. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. Well, I just have to say that your comment, and I did kind of think that on that first part, the idea of the, you know, question, why wasn't she answering, did have a kind of a stalker-type vibe to it. But when you commented, I started to see that whole idea of there is something very chilling about the tone of the right. So a great comment there, Rex. And up next, we have Midnight Hope by K-Dab. And I was going to have Robbie read that, but since he had to go, Rex, will you read
that? All right. Midnight Hope by K-Dab. I know you'll wake and wander, looking for words of swallowed night, dancing on my meadowed paper, shadows of yesterday's ink, still looking for your smile. Window quivers, wild, rattled march, aging moon, still looking to be touched. Tall pine sentinels wave, as wonder shedding needles crossing hillside, fragrant shadows rising like lanterns, carried in arms of feathered branches. I imagine sounds of water tracing, truer images of a distant smile, stowed away with Orion's belt, hoping rescue before the morning sun has its willful way. If only we could touch each other at the same time, such a moment far from the work of the day, to play without seconds ticking, walking their way into tomorrow. Oh, sweet moon, if she could see you as I do, alone in my meadow's grassy dance, feeling the silence, filling my pillow with the hope of midnight.
Read there, Rex. It's pretty obvious, but I'll say it anyways. We've actually switched over to, because we're done with the Jim Morrison, we've switched to carryovers from after midnight, midnight prompts. I really like the use, I like how dreamlike this imagery is, as if we're walking through dreams. I like the use of the nature imagery, especially window quivered, wild, rattled, March, aging moon, still looking to be touched. The representation, the personification of the moon as searching for that touch, searching for that lover's touch. I also like the tall pine sentinels wave as wonder shedding needles crossing hillside. I like the idea of using the sentinels, the idea of the pine trees being the guardians, and how they brought sounds in this. I imagine sounds of water tracing truer images of a distant smile. To me, the overall idea of this rite is the loneliness felt when someone you love is too far away, that you can't touch them, that you can't look into their eyes. And I really like how they went with, in the last stanza, "Oh, sweet moon." I feel like that adds a really classical poetry feel to it. You know, that wishing, that hoping, that if only they could see into your dreams, see things through your eyes. I just thought it was a beautiful and thoughtful rite all the way through and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Me, I'm going to go with longing, because she's got meadow in here twice, wants to lead out. I know you'll wake and wander looking for words of swallowed night, dancing on my meadowed paper. Shadows of yesterday's ink, still looking for your smile. Then finish out with, "Oh, sweet moon, if she could see you as I do, alone in my meadow's grassy dance, feeling the silence, filling my pillow with the hope of midnight." Kind of hits on that notion of longing in the moment. You hit on the being far away, and that's probably, yes, a good part of it. It hits on the coldness with the March aging moon and the tall pine sentinel's wave. Hits on those notions of the chill. Again, that there's a note of cold and the thought of the wake and wander in the first stanza, still looking for your smile. Yesterday's ink, there's that notion of staying up to write, yet it's not. It's coming out sad as opposed to that which is offered up, if only we could touch each other at the same time, such a moment far from the work of day to play without second sticking, walking away in tomorrow. And then that, "Oh, sweet moon." There's that vision across the void and the silence filling my pillow. And that's the head resting, going down to sleep because worn out and the words are not coming anymore, but still. There's that wish, that longing, that want.
Absolutely. Right. I like, yep, that great choice of a word, longing. And up next, we have "Midnight of Transgression" by Daniel Duhame. And it goes like this: "Midnight, a witch's hour to cast spells upon a waxing or waning moon, cauldron of darkness, overshadowed moon, mysteries abound upon the world blanketed in blackness. Moonbeam's light calls the Wiccans to dance merrily, hand in hand as spells enchanting out with unearthly tones. Demons summoned from a burning fire, lit by the flames that surround them, burning ambers spit and sputter with images of dragons molded by fire. Smoke rises up to words that stars that greet it with content because the transgressive midnight concludes." End poem.
Great read, Pam. Nicely done out little scene there with the witching hour rolling up to midnight, and then that sort of, especially with the demon songs of burning fire lit by the flames that surround them, burning amber stick and sputter with images of a dragon molded by fire. There's that notion of, especially with the midnight hour being the that move into other realms, it gives you that sort of nothing ever good ever happens after midnight. Beware in dark fields with wicked around fires and cauldrons, or ye might be spelled upon. All right, Pam, what you got?
Absolutely. I really like the imagery to create the atmosphere, to look into that idea of the veil that gets lifted at the midnight hour. I particularly liked, I have to say, for me, I liked the entirety of the first and last stanzas. but burning amber spit and sputter with images of dragons molded by fire was a particularly strong imagery. I mean, you could just kind of see the whole idea of the fire curling and rising into the shape of a dragon. I thought this was just a really wonderful write and very well done.
Yes. Was it bubble, toil and trouble?
Toil, bubble, and
by that pricking of my thumb, something wicked is way come. All right.
Yep.
What we got next?
The three witches from Shakespeare, from Hamlet, if I remember right. Same poem. Let me go ahead and grab the next one. I thought I had done that, but apparently not. All right. And I believe we have up next one for you to read, Rex, which will be Nectophile by Random Scribbler.
Okay. Nectophile by Random Scribbler. First light is the hour that draws maximum attention, notwithstanding the fact that raucous it may be, since it is the harbinger of the advent of Aurora. For the enamored denizen, affiance to temporal endeavors, notwithstanding fracas with heat and dust, have given word to be in good time for the amorous rendezvous. Therefore, fortuitous, few discern the soliloquy of the bewitching hour, euphonious it may be. And during the 0 hours, the multitude is in somnolent habitat, enervated, devitalized. It gratefully submits to the summons of the nymph from the slumberland. Omitting the insomniac solitary recalcitrant hermit, the solo valiant to defy the salutations and elude the fascinations of the beauty sleep. With canines and felines as Ciccarone, in bearing illuminated dirge, glimpsing the luna being engulfed, oftentimes by the nimbus, and scanning ether for the celestial minuscule incandescent points scintillating in their spots. Uncaring of the mystifying silhouettes cavorting thereabouts, unhearing the reverberations of rivulets nearabouts, unmindful of rugged elevations, unlearning the eternal verities so as to assimilate perceptual impressions, he is on a mission to permeate the realm that is singular and enigmatic, yet galvanic and riveting, to infiltrate the domain that is peculiar and baffling, yet hypnotic and captivating, with an eye to set eyes on the panorama that is fantastic, yet fabulous to behold. The solitary rover promenades through the penumbral avenue and dissipates into the collisionist mist. End poem. Well, Pam.
Read there, Rex.
Yeah, I know why you gave that to me.
What's that?
I know why you gave this to me.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, besides the $10 words, I have the hardest. Well, that and that the fact that it's written in white writing with a black background, which just absolutely makes my eyes hurt. So whenever possible, yes, yes. This one was definitely going to you. All right. So I like that they start out with the first light is the hour that draws maximum attention, notwithstanding the fact that raucous it may be, since it is the harbinger of the advent of Aurora. I like that in that first stanza they remind us of that beauty of that first light, and yet there's something just to me it's the idea that it exposes everything, that it exposes things we don't want people to see or to know about us. I like how the three stanzas after that have that one word in front of each, at the beginning of each stanza, therefore, hence, omitting know, really great use of grabbing the reader's attention. Omitting the insomniac, solitary, recalcitrant hermit, the soul valiant, to defy the salutations of the lewd fascinations of the beauty sleep. I like the beauty sleep because it makes me think of the fairy tale Sleeping Beauty, but this is to me the idea of those that see the wonder of nighttime, those that see the visions of the night and the magic of the night because they do not sleep. He is on a mission to permeate the realm that is singular and enigmatic, yet galvanic and riveting, to infiltrate the domain that is peculiar and baffling, and hypnotic and captivating. To me, I really like how this delves into mythology, and yet at the same time, it is a voice of reality, that voice of seeing the strength and the beauty of the night, the magic, as I've already said, but I think it's worth repeating. And I like the line, he is on a mission to permeate the realm that is singular. That whole idea of going into a thought that's singular and broadening it. You know, I think this is a wonderful, right, showing appreciation for the way the mind works in those midnight hours. And it's very well done.
Okay. I like the title, Nick Defile, One Who Loves Dark or Darkness. And the first two stanzas hit on that notion of those who draw with the first hours of light, coming dawn, and that amorous rendezvous of first light, so to speak. Then you hit on that third, that two-line thought. Therefore, fortuitous, you discern this telegraphy as a bewitching hour, if phonious it may be. I like that thought because you really listen to the midnight and long into the early morning hours. There is a nice soliloquy that can be offered up by that which is out there, whether it be an owl or tree frogs or whatever else is there, on the prowl. And then that thought again, back to those who are normalized. The multitude is in somnolent habitat. Innovate, revitalize. It gratefully submits to the summons of the nymph from Slumberland. Nice touch with that. And then the thought with the insomniac, because there is a difference. Insomniac is psychological, whereas the nyctophile is someone who chooses where lies their boundaries and their normal what is and what isn't. I like the language, the thought with a singular, enigmatic, galvanic, riveting, peculiar, baffling, yet hypnotic and captivating. And that back end, that last stanza I like through, the solitary road promenades through the penumbral avenue and dissipates into the collisionist mist. Nice touch there, random scribbler. Thank you very much. Or what? Where are we going?
Well, we're at the back end, so a great show tonight, Rex.
Yes. A lot of deep thoughts and some chilly ones, too. Not to mention some light ones. We have a nice variety.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Nice variety. And I'm looking forward to whatever it is that you come up with for next week. So.
Oh, it's that time already? Damn.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, have a good night.
Okie dokie. Well, I guess I got to do some thinking late into the night.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll come up with something awesome.
That remains to be seen.
I'm sure we'll all be pleasantly surprised. Now, you always do come up with great prompts, so I'm not worried in the least. You know, I don't know what you do to get your prompts, but brainyquotes.com is an awesome site to check out for quotes, just letting you know.
Never been there.
Well, I have it bookmarked to find my prompts oftentimes, so I highly recommend going there because they have a list of whose birthday it is, and then, you know, whatever, like if you're, there's a particular theme you're looking for, a particular person, you know, you can just search right on that site. So highly recommend it. And, yeah. All right. Well, very cool. And all right, everyone, have a good night.
Good night.